We are joined by Beverly State Rep Jerry Paracello. Jerry, welcome. Thanks for joining us here on MSONewsSports.com.
Oh, great to be with you, Bill. Thank you.
Jerry, let's talk about a number of different issues that are out there that are, you know, whether impacting Beverly or impacting all of our state residents here. And I want to go back to the legislative session and to some of your work. And one of the things you were very involved with was sports betting, and that all passed. I think a lot of folks were surprised, thought it might just get hung up in the legislature again this year, but it passed. So give me an overview on that, how you see it, and what's happened since the votes and so on, because then it has to be implemented.
Yeah, sure. No, thanks. Yeah, so, I mean, it's something that, you know, like you said, we've been working on for quite a while. So I'm chairman of the Economic Development Committee in the House, and so our jurisdiction includes gaming, so with the casinos. And so we drafted sports legislation to legalize betting on sports in Massachusetts. And the House actually passed it in July of 2021, and we were sort of waiting on the Senate to act. And the Senate finally passed their version in May of this year. The big issue, the big difference was that in our version in the House, we allowed betting on college sports, and the Senate version prohibited betting on college sports. So that was sort of that thing that hung up negotiations for a while, but we worked on it, literally like the last day of the session, we came to an agreement. So the way it'll work is you'll be allowed to bet on college sports except for Massachusetts teams unless they're in a college tournament. So, for example, if Boston College were to make the March Madness tournament or, you know, something like that, or UMass makes the Frozen Four, things like that, then you can bet on it. But otherwise, individual games like Boston College, UMass, you wouldn't be able to bet on. But all other college sports you'd be able to bet on. So we anticipate just the licensing fees alone, which are $5 million each, will bring in about $80 million to the state. That's before a bet is even made. And then we anticipate probably about $70 to $80 million coming into the state annually from tax revenue from those that. So the bettors bet, and then the profits that are made by DraftKings and the casinos, et cetera, they'll pay anywhere between 15 to 20% of their profit will go back to the state in taxes. So it's a big deal, and it's not implemented yet. The Gaming Commission has to come up with the rules and regulations and give out the licenses. So I'm hoping within the next few months people will be able to place their bets.
Jerry, I understand the concerns about college betting, but having covered Boston College basketball for a number of years, I don't think we have to worry about them getting into a postseason tournament. I may be wrong on that, but come on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of states have taken that approach where they prohibited their in-state schools, for example, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut, in New Jersey, which started it all, was the first state to have sports betting. They don't allow betting on, for example, Rutgers. So, yeah, we don't exactly have powerhouses. But, you know, our hockey teams are really good. And there's probably not a lot of betting on college hockey. But, for example, you will be able to bet on the Beanpot because there's four or more teams in the tournament. So, you know. But, you know, the huge things, March Madness, you know, the NCAA football title game, for example, if it's Alabama against Ohio State, you know, there's a lot of interest and you'd be able to bet on that.
No, absolutely. And why not let the state and help us out statewide on the budget for sure? No, so that's all good news, I guess. Hey, speaking of the budget, Jerry, what can you share with us about the state budget? We hear about now, you know, people are hearing about the economy, the stock market going way down, a variety of different things, high inflation. But where are we with the state budget? I know it all came to a close at the end of the fiscal year, at the end of June, but what can you share with us about the overall state budget picture?
Yeah, I mean, we're in amazingly good shape considering all the factors that you laid out. I remember having discussions in 2020, you know, sort of during the peak of COVID, when we were told, you know, be prepared to tell your cities and towns that there's going to be a 20% cut in local aid, 20% cut in the money that we can send them for their schools. But Massachusetts really rebounded well from the COVID pandemic, and our budget situation is doing extremely well. We ended up with about $3.5 billion surplus, and as of course, folks have seen in the news that there'll be almost a $3 billion rebate going back to taxpayers probably around November timeframe because we did so well. We exceeded what we thought we were going to take in by an incredible amount. So it's been a good story for the Commonwealth. Our unemployment rate is among the lowest in the nation. And we were able to actually increase funding to our schools by a record amount. So, for example, in Beverly last year, Beverly got about $10 million from the state for the schools, and this year it's getting about $12 million. So we were able to increase it. So after telling them a couple of years ago to be prepared for cuts, they actually got an increase in funding. And there's still about $2 billion of that federal ARPA money that's available to be spent, plus the surplus money that we've got. We put a decent amount of that into the so-called rainy day fund because there is concern about how the economy is turning and inflation and then talk of a recession. So we want to make sure that we have a sufficient rainy day fund, you know, if things do turn negatively, that we still have resources to provide to our citizens and our cities and towns. But right now we're in good shape, which is great news.
All right, Jerry, I want to touch on a couple of Beverly issues in just a second, but you mentioned COVID just a moment ago. I understand that you actually came down with COVID, and this is the first time now that you've come down with COVID, I imagine?
Actually,
it is the second? Oh.
Yeah, I got it early on, like January of 2021, before even the vaccines were available. But I was fine. The only thing I had then was like a sense, I lost my sense of taste and smell. My daughter and her friends were pulling jokes on me by blindfolding me and making me taste things and stuff like that, raw eggs and, you know, things like that. But this time, yeah, I got it a few weeks ago again. Kind of felt a little like the cold was coming down. I tested, and unfortunately, you know, I was positive, so I had to do my quarantine. So it's still out there, you know. It's amazing. I mean, you're thinking after. I mean, I've had four shots. I've had two regular shots and two boosters. So I didn't get hit very hard, but you know, unfortunately, it's still out there. You know, so we have to be aware and make sure we take care of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, your daughter and her friends sound like the Mean Girls. Oh my gosh, what's up with them?
They lined up like five things, you know, and then made me do a taste test. You know, it was Italian salad dressing, a raw egg, the milk, orange juice.
Jerry, I mean, do you eat? You don't eat raw eggs to begin with, right? I mean,
I'm no Rocky Balboa, you know.
Oh man.
Fun with me, you know, early on.
I hope there weren't two or three things that they didn't even tell you what they were, but I'm just worried. Okay. And you're still healthy and still around talking about it. That's good news, though.
Yeah, I did a road race Sunday, so I'm fine, you know, which is good.
No, that's right, yeah. You're not planning to run the marathon again this year, are you?
No, I think those days are over. I think I'm one and done with the marathon, but I still run like 5Ks and get out there. I'm still in the Army National Guard, so I got to keep fit, you know, for that. Every year we have to do a physical fitness test, so... you know, it keeps me young. It keeps me trying to keep up with those 21-year-old soldiers. So.
Exactly. All right. Now, a couple of quick Beverly issues here. The Varian contamination site, or I know that Paul Layton of the Salem News did a story on that maybe a week or two ago now, probably 2 weeks ago now, actually. Where do we stand with that in Beverly and the Varian site?
Yeah, so this has been going on for a long time. You know, the Varian has been responsible for cleaning us up since the property had hazardous materials dumped on it back in the 50s. And Paul Layton's done a great job of covering this. And so essentially the State Department of Environmental Protection has oversight of this. And after about 20 years of efforts, basically the state has told the Varian folks, you know, you need to start over and come up with new methods. It's just, you know, they've done a lot of testing, and they're saying that it's not affecting our drinking water. I mean, we don't have wells in Beverly in that area. We have municipal water, so it doesn't affect that. But it was concerned about potential some air contamination in basements. So they've tested all the basements in the area, and they're saying that it's safe, but there's still obviously a lot of concern in the neighborhood. So basically, Varian has to come up with a new plan, and it's currently being reviewed by the State Department of Environmental Protection. I got $100,000 in our state budget to give to the city of Beverly to do their own evaluation of the testing and just to kind of have some secondary oversight. I mean, the DEP has jurisdiction over it, but I just felt it was important for the city of Beverly to have some resources of their own to double check and make sure that what Varian is saying they're doing, they are doing. So it's a work in progress. I think it's taken too long, but there is a renewed emphasis on making sure that, it gets cleaned up. The neighbors are very involved. We have monthly meetings with Varian and their crew that's doing the cleanup. So we're hopeful that, in the near future, this can be resolved.
Yeah, that money for the city of Beverly sounds like a great idea to, at least for to maybe comfort some of the residents a little bit as well in that area. And
there's some skepticism, about, Varian and doing the work, and is it truly an independent person that's doing it for them? They're supposed to be, and the state does have oversight, but I just felt it was important to give the city of Beverly some of its own resources to double check that.
All right, one last issue, City of Beverly. That's the Hall Whitaker Bridge that's out right now. So that impacts the Ryleside neighborhood. Tell me about that. And so that's totally closed now, right?
It's totally closed, yeah. Unfortunately, we knew it was in tough shape, but the plan was to replace it. It was on a list of bridges to be replaced. And then when the state did a very meticulous evaluation of the bridge, they had divers go down there and they checked out the bridge, they just determined that it was unsafe to keep it open. So we literally got like one day's notice that the bridge was going to close. And so unfortunately that's cut off one avenue of approach to the Ryleside neighborhoods. It's on Bridge Street near the old bowling mat. So the state is going to have a meeting with the city and the residents on October 11th to give an update on the plans to replace the bridge. The Kernwood Bridge nearby is also in tough shape, and that's got to be replaced. So we've got two bridges, probably within a mile and a half of each other, that need to be replaced. So there's a lot of work that has to be done. This talk of a potential temporary bridge to replace the Hall Whitaker, and then they'll replace the Kernwood Bridge. We'll get more details on October 11th about the state plan to address that issue. But it's going to be at least a couple of years before people can cross that again. So it's tough on the neighbors. It's a difficult situation. We sort of neglected our infrastructure for a long time, and recently the federal government, the Biden administration, passed the infrastructure bill. So that'll provide Massachusetts with about $9 billion in infrastructure money, but it's probably, even though it sounds like a lot of money, there's a huge demand in Massachusetts to replace our roads and bridges and upgrades. So that money will be spent, no question about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's with the infrastructure, you're right that it's been neglected for so long. And, you think of all the infrastructure. I mean, these are things that we can see. Just think of the things we can't see that, that need to be repaired as well, I imagine, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of things, like we have we literally have some water pipes that are made of wood, 100 years old. I mean, things that are underground that you wouldn't see. But, there's a huge demand. The Bourne Bridge and the Sagamore Bridge and the Cape, those two alone are probably going to cost about $4 billion to replace. So that could take a good chunk of that $9 billion right there. There's a huge demand. And that's one of the things that we're looking at when we talked earlier about the budget and how we have a surplus, is spending more money on infrastructure in Massachusetts to try to catch up with some of these things that need to be repaired.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jerry, great talking with you. And so thanks so much for taking some time to join us. And I hope you're feeling better soon. And again, great to be checking in with you.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Great to talk to you, too.
Yep. Jerry Parasella, State Rep, City of Beverly, here on MSO NewSports.com.